Mini episode 134 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode number 134 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with you. We've got a great one for you here today. A gentleman that we've had on the show a couple of times previously on the subject of horse racing. With us today to help us break down this year's Belmont Stakes, which, of course, carry with it the potential of a Triple Crown win. I'll have another coming off of the excellent performances down the stretch in the Kentucky Derby and in the Preakness. And we were slated to have with us here today. We were hoping to have a couple of our in-house panelists with us as well. We did a Triple Crown preview prior to the running of the Kentucky Derby, as we do every year. And we always leave it open that if there is going to be the potential for a Triple Crown, that we will then reconvene for the Belmont. We were not able to bring back Bob Glassman and Steve Callis due to their schedules to join us here today. So we'll just be talking one-on-one with this individual. But we've done this a couple of times on the show previously. Always enjoy talking to him in a lot of different areas. And he's one of those sports broadcasters where you can go into some different areas with him. You can go a little bit broader than you can with some other folks. He's even broadcast, as we've talked about previously, one of our big favorites, pro wrestling. He's done a talk show on that. And again, an expert on horse racing as well as all of the more mainstream American sporting pursuits. I speak, of course, of Jody McDonald. You can listen to him on WIP in Philadelphia. And as I understand it, also regular appearances, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Radio. And I've caught him on many different occasions, filling in for Dan Patrick, also on TV, of course, with Fox Sports Net now carrying the Dan Patrick show. So Jody McDonald is always a very busy individual. We're always very happy when he can make time for us. And it's great to have him back on the show. Gary, I haven't done this in a while, but it's great to be able to do it again. Jody Mack, welcome back to the FDA Tour. Sir, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. Thank you for the kind and lengthy introduction. Now, the guys who couldn't show tonight, how did they do? Did anybody have another on Kentucky Derby Day?
Actually, you're not going to believe this. When we did our, we did this in the form of a mock draft as we did last year, and there were 12 picks that went. There were four of us that were making picks. Steve Servillo, our senior producer, with the final pick, picked I'll Have Another, and so he's going to end up running away with this thing here. I mean, it was very narrow for that horse not to even get picked in this. I mean, I guess it shows you with the benefit of retrospect, Jody, that going into the Kentucky Derby, I mean, he would have been somewhere on the list of horses that people thought had a decent chance. But for a chance at immortality, I don't think anybody was really thinking that at the time.
Right. So you had four guys, three picked apiece. He took the last one. So he was the 12th choice in the 20-horse field in the Kentucky Derby is what you're telling me.
Yes, yes. He almost didn't make a 12th choice out of 12.
I might have had him somewhere in the high, the 8-9 range, but not far from 12 either. So rest assured, if he was on my ticket on Kentucky Derby Day, it was somewhere in the back end of superfectas and trifectas and the like. So I'm not going to give you any 20-20 hindsight BS that says I'll Have Another on Derby Day as well.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned 20-20 hindsight, because I don't know if I'm falling prey to it with the premise that I'm going to put out to you right here. Maybe I am. Maybe this is revisionism. But when you look back at the horses that have missed out at a chance to convert the Triple Crown ever since a spectacular bid fell short in 1979 and the drought was underway, I look at this horse,
Jody. I look at the fact that, what did he lead for? A total of maybe 20 yards between the two races? I mean, you talk about a closer. He's been the classic definition of a closer. And everybody always says going to the Belmont because it is the longest one out there. That's what you need. So you look at that. I mean, on paper, and with the benefit of looking back at history, maybe some of the horses that went to the Belmont with a chance to win it all didn't have as good of a reputation of closers. Is this one of the best chances on paper since 1979 for a horse to bring it home?
Couple things. Number one, the part about horses coming off the pace, closers, call them what you will, being at an advantage in the Belmont Stakes because it is a longer race, has actually been proven out over the years to be a myth. That horses win on the front end on the Belmont Stakes more than they do at either Pimlico or Churchill Downs. It's a test of endurance of a mile and a half, and oftentimes all the horses are struggling when they get deeply late into the stretch because no one has gone a mile and a half before this, and there's a good chance that none of these horses will after. So I don't think it's a plus or a minus for the running style of I'll Have Another in this particular race. Back for original question as to whether this horse is more prepped and ready and has a better chance than the other failed 11 attempts we've had over the last 30-plus years. I don't think so. I can say I've not been impressed by the two wins because they both were good. They both were very similar, and the horse just has a desire to get to the wire in front, and he's done so in some pretty good times. I don't know that he's matched up against Killer Fields. There are other horses that have come into this race where I've been more impressed with all that they've done throughout their entire career and what they did in both the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness. Two that come to mind over the last 10 years are Smarty Jones and Big Brown. I was all in on both of those horses, and I thought that they were the ones that were going to end the long drought that we've been going through in trying to find the next Triple Crown winner. I don't look at I'll Have Another in that same vein. Now, that being said, I'll Have Another could win on Saturday, and just because there are others that came up just short in previous efforts, it doesn't mean that we should look down our nose at what I'll Have Another has accomplished. You beat who you beat. In your given year, if you're the best and you can win all three races, it is a phenomenal accomplishment, and comparing them to other horses that came in previous years and may or may not have gotten it done, it kind of is irrelevant because it really is what you do when you're given your chance for this five-week period in the spotlight. So whether he's beaten a good crew or not, whether this is the best group of three-year-olds we've seen in a while or one of the weakest groups of three-year-olds we've seen in a while, it becomes kind of irrelevant, and I will not take away from I'll Have Another's accomplishment if he is victorious on Saturday.
Yeah, I don't think anybody will. And the thing about the closers, that's fascinating. Look at us going all Mythbusters here on closers at the Belmont, because that certainly is the conventional wisdom. So it is interesting to hear you puncture that and to puncture it with, cited history there. The other thing that I'm looking at here, too, in terms of the circumstances for this race, and it's interesting, is one of our two in-house guys did send along some notes, Steve Callis. And he was talking about he likes Dullahan on Saturday and cited the fresh legs. And I can't help but wonder about this. It almost kind of seems like pitch counts in baseball, because I think he's thinking about the conditioning of a horse to do this three times in this many weeks. I mean, back in the day when there were Triple Crown winners, and I realize that there was a tremendous drought between the 40s and the 70s, but then you had it three times in the 70s. I mean, back at that time, we never would have spoken of, can a horse get up this many times in a couple of weeks? I mean, are we at the point where, I don't want to say that the horses have been sissified or whatever the case may be, that's a judgmental term, I suppose, but are we at a point where they've just been conditioned, much like pitchers' arms, to where the wear and tear of the three races is maybe just a little bit too much for them?
I think sissified is actually a quite accurate word. But I will tell you that it has as much to do with the breeding as it does with the conditioning. That horses used to be bred to run more often, run longer distance, get longer careers in, whereas over the last 15, 20, 25. Some people think it goes back as 25 years. I don't. I think it's more like 15 to 20. Horses are bred much more leaning towards speed, that it's all about speed, that who can go the fastest, distance be darned. We're not worried about that. And the racing industry itself has actually made moves in that direction to justify it. You can make the argument of which came first, the chicken or the egg. Did the those who designed the races and booked the races and decide the links on the races react to the breeding industry changing their philosophy, or was it the other way around? It kind of all came together, as a matter of fact. Yeah, it starts with the breeding, and then it goes to the way that they're handled by the specific trainers and the owners and the like, that they just don't run as often, and they don't run as hard, and they don't run as long distance as they used to, which has, I think, added to the difficult nature of winning the Triple Crown to begin with, and that's a very good reason why we haven't had one in over 30 years. It's going to take a very special horse to be able to pull this off, and we'll find out on Saturday if I'll have another is that kind of horse.
Well, in terms of any of these kind of environmental factors at play here and the different things that are going to influence the outcome of this, both of our in-house guys here, Steve Callis and Bob Glassman, both cited to me this notion of the detention barn for the Belmont this week. As I understand it from my limited knowledge of it, I guess the horses are going to be packed in a little bit closer the next couple of days than they would be otherwise, and some of them perhaps taken out of their comfort zones. Is this anything that you give any credence to whatsoever as far as possibly affecting the outcome?
You never know, because none of the horses have ever been asked to spend their time, and you wouldn't even call it prepping, but just be detained. It's called a detention.
They've been asked their thoughts, Jody, but they haven't told us.
It's going to throw them off, I'm sure, at least some, but it's going to throw them off in equal amount because all the horses are being asked to do the same thing. So I don't know that there's an advantage or a disadvantage unless the horse is just his behavior and modification thereof have been to be able to do specific things leading up to races, which they might not be able to do. The reason that they've done this, and the New York Racing Association will deny this, but I firmly believe it, is the fact that a Triple Crown is on the line, and I'll have another is trained by Doug O'Neill, who's a trainer with a checkered past, to say the least, that he's in trouble in California right now for going above and beyond the rules and doing things to improve his horses' performances that break the rules that they have out in California, and he's looking at a suspension out there. I will tell you that if a Triple Crown was not on the line, that we would not have this extended detention barn that they're keeping the horses in. And if Doug O'Neill was not the trainer involved, that we would not have the detention barn extended time that these horses are going to have to go through. It's kind of a perfect storm scenario that has, in Naira's eyes, forced them to act. They're saying they're doing it just to keep everything above board and it's for the best of the sport. The racing fan would then turn around and say, well, then why don't you do this for every race? If you're that concerned that somebody's cheating and that you need to keep a much closer eye on it, well, it's expensive because you need to have security there 24/7 for as long as you're going to keep them in detention. And the New York Racing Association and no track in America goes to these lengths. But because it is one of the Triple Crown races and you do have the chance of a Triple Crown winner, and they, although they won't admit it, it's a trainer with a checkered past. That's why this has come together the way that it has. I don't like it. I think that if you're going to do it, you got to do it and make a commitment to it and be ready to spend the money, or you can't just pull out special rules and special stops because of the magnitude of a race. But they've made their decision, and that's what they're going to have to comply with, and we'll see if it has any impact. And again, as you said, we're not going to be able to know. It'll be purely speculation after the race because I don't think any of the horses will be quoted on whether it did or didn't have a huge effect on them.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that you're correct about that, Jody. And as far as why they don't do it more often, yeah, some of those rent-a-cops in the barns, I understand, can be a little expensive, so they don't want to make a commitment on that. But let's talk about the optics of this thing for a second, because clearly the entire industry is looking at this weekend, this Saturday, as a tremendous opportunity. If it were to be the first Triple Crown winner since affirmed in 1978,
And looking at, you know, a situation that you alluded to a little bit of the seedy underbelly of this story here, a trainer who fairly or unfairly has been glossed by a lot of smart alecks with the name Drug O'Neill. So when you're looking at that, is this the industry and the Belmont track and anybody that's really involved in the decision making here trying to set a preemptive strike so that if this happens, that they can leverage it to the maximum extent and you won't have anybody pointing fingers after the fact? Is that basically what's driving this, is the sense that we want to be able to exploit this for the betterment of the industry and not have any nasty questions come swirling around afterwards?
If it was, then I would almost applaud it, because they want to try and keep everything above board and they don't want anybody questioning it ahead of time, and it could be a little preemptive, but I just don't think it works. I would not have done it if I was in charge of the New York Racing Association. I don't think you can make a drastic change like this. As far as what it will mean to the overall horse racing industry if this horse wins, too many people make too big a deal out of what a Triple Crown winner will bring. Will it add interest? Yeah, it will. Will it be something that will get fans a little bit more in tuned into what's going on in the horse? Could we find some new fans who become dedicated race fans because of this year? Yeah, sure. Is it going to be the catch-all, save the horse racing industry event that is going to put horse racing back on the map and pack tracks across the country for years to come? Absolutely not. It's one race, it's one day, yeah, it's history, it's going to be something that hasn't been done in 30 years, and they'll get a nice little boost from it, but it's not going to last long. And it almost, if I were the powers that be in the horse racing industry, I would be more worried about where it is I'll have another go from here. Because we've seen with a couple of the other horses that didn't win, that didn't even get it done, that came to Belmont and came up short, their racing careers were shortened shortly thereafter, because there is so much money to be made in the breeding industry, the millions and millions of dollars thereafter, that they don't want to take a chance that either A, the horse goes backwards and doesn't look it good, or B, and worst case scenario, injures himself and doesn't ever make it to the breeding shed. So what they need to do is they've got to capitalize on this after the fact. If this horse wins, you have to hope that you're going to see him at least two more times before the year is out, either up in Saratoga for the Travers, or in New York for one of the fall races, maybe down at Monmouth. The horse originally came from California so they could go back out for some of the big stakes races out there and eventually rerun in the Breeders' Cup Classic come November this season. If that doesn't happen, if this horse follows a lot of his predecessors and goes immediately to the breeding shed and they come up with some injury that they don't want to take a chance with, and yes, they can doctor those, and Doug O'Neill would have no problems coming up with a doctor who would say, yes, the horse does have potential injury problems. Oh, they'll just retire the horse. And then whatever goodwill you've built up, whatever added interest you put into the mix because of him winning the Triple Crown will dissipate that much more quickly if the horse does what a lot of other horses do, which is decide retirement and the stud barn, here we come.
If you had a guess, Jody, looking at this in a post-Barbaro world, with the amount of money that's going to be at stake for a Triple Crown winner here, I mean, what are the odds that they're leading the thing right from the winner's circle on Saturday, right, to go look at some lurid pictures to get worked up for the Breeders' barn there? What are the odds we're looking at that immediately versus taking the chance of running it a few more times? Because, again, anything can happen, as we've seen previously here, and we got to be looking at just the kajillions of dollars at stake here when you're looking at breeding the first Triple Crown winner in 34 years. I mean, if you had to make an educated guess, where would you think it comes down if he wins?
It's a very good question, and one that I can't give you a definitive answer. I'll tell you what I believe, and then I'll tell you what I hope. What I hope is that the powers that be, the owner, Doug O'Neill, I'm sure, will be confided in and be given a chance to voice his opinion, but don't kid yourself, the owner will make the final decision on this, and whatever Doug O'Neill thinks is right, wrong, or indifferent will be taken in, will be analyzed, and then will be either held up and or completely dismissed. I hope that the horse runs at least two more times. There is no chance that you will see this horse as a four-year-old, that if he runs once and or twice, and they may just put them away to the Breeders' Cup and bring them back specifically for the Breeders' Cup. My guess is that they'll run one time prior to that and then go to the Breeders' Cup. I think that's all you could ask and or expect of them because, as you say, we are talking about tens of millions of dollars in breeding fees. My fear is that there's a good chance that the horse retires after the Belmont Stakes if it's victorious because the risk-reward is just too great. I hope that's not the case. It seems like they're in it to have a good time. It seems like they're in it to watch the horse run. It seems like they enjoy themselves when the horse is out there running. So it would lessen the experience they have of owning this horse because other than getting those checks every single time your horse breeds, there's no excitement to it. There's no really fun to it other than turning around and spending the money that you make. But it does take away from the owner's experience. So I fear that the horse could retire after a win on Saturday. There's enough of an argument to be made, and there's enough upside to running him a couple more times that's what I will wholeheartedly root for.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would join you in rooting for that also here too. But, yeah, I would agree. It's hard not to be cynical in an industry like this and with the amount of money that could be at stake or frankly, will be at stake if this comes to pass and I'll have another wins on Saturday. If, of course, he doesn't win, there's a tiny, tiny handful of horses I think that most touts feel could knock him off, whether it be the aforementioned Dallahan, whether it be a Union Rags, who was thought to have a strong chance coming into the Derby, or whether it be Painter, Bob Baffert's horse here, which he's hoping is not going to be his third Aladar finish in as many Triple Crown races here, replacing Bodemeister as his prime entry on Saturday. So when you look at those three, how do you assess their chances? Or if I'm missing something here, and a lot of other people are missing something, any other horse that might have a chance to knock off, I'll have another.
I've done all my homework for the race. Once they put the post positions in order, I've done all my handicap, and I've gone back and watched all the video that I needed to watch and talked to the people who've been at the varying tracks where these horses have worked the last couple of weeks. And I'll give Doug O'Neill credit. He's going to do something that no one's ever done before, which is come into the Belmont Stakes with a chance to win a Triple Crown or purely breezing the horse. He's not going to work the horse at all. Now, he didn't work him at all between the Belmont and the Preakness, which in years gone by was also a no-no. You've got to get at least one workout in. The last several years, we have seen horses go from the Derby to the Preakness and not work out in between. As far as I know, no Triple Crown champion has ever gone through the first two and then gone the 3 weeks between the Belmont and not have a published work. So he's trying to do it differently than anybody else, and if it works for him, he's a genius. If not, he'll be second-guessed forever that he didn't get a work into the horse. So I like guys who think outside the box. Personally, I'm not going to pick the horse to win, so I'm going to use that as part of the reason why, but we'll find out if Doug O'Neill knows what he's doing or I know what I'm thinking when I handicap a race. After going through the 12 horses that were entered, I can't ever remember doing a Belmont Stakes where, to me, there is as drastic a divide between contenders and complete pretenders. I see, you mentioned four of the five, and there's one other horse that I think has a chance to be a factor on Saturday. So there are five horses for me that are in play here. The other seven, I think, not only will not be close when the race comes to its conclusion, but I don't think belong in this race and are there solely because I'll have another didn't completely blow people away with the way he performed in the Belmont, and people like to have their horses in races like the Belmont Stakes and the like. They don't belong. They shouldn't be in the race. I don't know if they should be in the Woody Stevens on the undercard, but that's just me. So I've whittled it down to five, and those five horses are I'll have another, Dullahan, Union Rags, Painter, and Streetlight, who is the stone-cold closer in the field. And like we discussed earlier, some people think that being in the closer position is where you want to be in the Belmont. Well, it all depends on how much speed is in the race at the beginning of the race that makes it viable for a closer to be a big part of it. I think we'll see decent fractions. I think they'll go fairly fast up front, but I don't think it'll be suicidal by any stretch of the imagination. So that's why I don't think Street Life will be in the top three. He could finish fourth and or fifth, but I think he'll be in the top three. I'm chalking it up on you. It's not sexy. It's not exciting. It's not outrageous. I'm going to say that the top three horses, as per the odds and as per what most experts figure, will finish in the first, second, and third position. I'm going to put, like Mr. Callis has, Delahan on top. I think the horse, in prepping for his three-year-old campaign on grass, did enough distance running that his breeding says that he should be able to get a distance of ground. I've been impressed with his races this year. He was running fastest of all, which is tough to believe with the way that I'll Have Another actually won the Kentucky Derby. But if you go back and check the fractions, the horse that was closing fastest of all was Delahan to get up to be third in the Kentucky Derby. I also like the fact that he's got the five-week layoff, whereas I'll Have Another had to go down and run a grinding and grueling stretch duel against Bodie Meister in Baltimore to win the Preakness. The workout that he had this week at Belmont, which was pushed back a day because of some rains, I talked to someone who was there with a stopwatch and watched it, and they said they could not believe. They looked down at their watch, and it was 45.9 and change. Most times when a horse does that for four furlongs, you go, uh-oh, that's not good, because it's way too fast, and that you worry that the horse will have left his race on the track that day rather than bringing it to the gate on racing day. But the person I talked to who watched the workout said couldn't have done it easier. The jockey never moved, was a statue on top, didn't ask the horse a little bit. And before he looked down to see what the watch said, he figured it was going to be high 47, maybe even 48. And he looks down and it's 45.9. So this horse is primed and ready, and I think is in a good post position at number five. Can watch the couple of horses that will go out in front of him and pick and choose his spots. I think everything sets up for Delahan. I think that I'll Have Another and Union Rags will be 1-2. When they get to the top of the stretch at Belmont Park, the speed will have given by then. And I think those two will do battle, and Delahan will eat both up coming on the outside and win this by more than a length.
Thereby breaking the hearts of all the casual fans across America. But very, very interesting. There's the clip and save prediction. Is your schedule going to work out to be able to see it in person, Jody?
No, this year, as a matter of fact, I can't. I've been to, I think it's either 15 out of 18 or 16 out of 18. I've been at almost all of the Belmont Stakes over the last 20 years, but I have a previous commitment, but I have already scheduled my previous commitment so that at between 6:15 and 6:45, I will not be responsible to be doing anything, and I will be in front of a television, and rest assured, either Friday evening and or Saturday morning, I will get somewhere so that I am backing my beliefs and or predictions with my own hard-earned cash, so I will have a financial rooting interest as well as a pride rooting interest in the outcome of the Belmont Stakes.
Tremendous. And, again, based on your prediction, you won't be missing seeing a Triple Crown come to pass anyways on Saturday. So we'll have to see that shake out. And it was great to be able to get you back on, Jody. And we look forward to hopefully sometime in the near future here getting you back on with our other friend, Rich Mancuso. And regrettably, the grappling game is not what it was when you guys were rocking your show in the heyday here. You know, outside of one day a year, WrestleMania, it doesn't seem like they're wanting to give us a whole lot. But it'd be fun to catch up on things with you guys nonetheless.
Done deal. Whenever we can work it out, I'd love to come back on.
Excellent. Always a pleasure, Jody. Thank you so much.
Good luck, and good luck to everybody else out there with the selections on Saturday. Hope you're cashing them, not trashing them.
We'll be getting down on it on Saturday, all of us, I'm sure. Thank you so much, Jody. Really appreciate it. Our friend, the great Jody McDonald, everybody. We want to thank him for being with us and thank all of you for tuning in here at the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com. This has been mini episode number 134 of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.